Working in a coal mine, going down, down, down. Working in a coal mine, about to step down. And welcome back and good morning. You're in my house, Rosie's house. We're here talking everything history with Dr. David Dean, Assistant Professor of History at Grand Canyon University. In particular today, talking the Labor Day three-day weekend. We've got a packed show for y'all today. We'll finish talking with Dr. Dean in this hour, the 8 o'clock hour. Of course, we've got John J. Harper coming in. Labor Day is one of the fertilizing holidays that you have to take special attention to address certain plants in your yard. We'll be covering that at 8 o'clock. 9 o'clock, we talk about the topic that you received if you're a subscriber to our newsletter at rosieonthehouse.com. Certain remodeling projects we're doing based on the age of existing homes. What is it about the 60s homes that we're changing right now? What is it about the 70 homes, the 80 homes, and the 90 homes? Filling in a lot of sunken living rooms right now. Converting open-air middle-of-the-house atriums into increased living space inside. And what about those garden tubs that were all tiled and square and cold and uncomfortable that we built all through the 90s? Well, we're ripping all those out, too. At 10 o'clock, we'll be addressing your issue. Give us a ring. If you've got a project you're trying to finish on the three-day weekend, give us a ring and let us help you talk you through it. We'll actually bring up certain topics and projects that you can finish in a three-day weekend. So all of that here at Rosie on the House between now all the way through 11 o'clock. Talking Labor Day, the conversation, Romy always wants to sell an increased enhanced membership to our listeners so they can hear what goes on during the breaks.
We were discussing during the break, you know, we do take this time in history very much for granted as far as going to work. You know, you're going to be safe. Maybe it's even extreme, you know, some of our safety precautions and things. But to read about that time in history, Dr. Dean, what's any good books that historical fiction maybe or?
I think some of the things that I would be reading is read about the Pullman strike. That was always a very interesting time. There's the Sandlot riots that go on in Chicago. There's some violence that goes on along with that. Those make some good stories. There's a presidential candidate, Eugene V. Debs. He was also a labor organizer and whatnot. He actually ran for president on the Communist Party. And in 1920, he garnered 100,000 votes. And so he's a really interesting character.
I don't know that name.
Eugene V. Debs, he was kind of a thorn in the flesh of management and politics and whatnot because he was so out there, so to speak. But you have to understand what's going to go on. Again, context. In Europe, labor is making big strides also in movements. And this is, of course, kind of a communist kind of thing in Europe where you get leading to the socialism and that kind of stuff. Well, labor unions come, and there's often the negative that gets applied to these times of violence and the foundation of the industrial workers of the world and the AFL and the CIO is this communist kind of bent to it. Well, it's not only not communist, it's just social change as you're recognizing the value of workers as opposed to just kind of stomping them down.
Well, they were horrific conditions.
They were. And in Europe, that form, how it worked itself out, was into what later became things like the Communist Revolution in Russia and whatnot. But here in America, because we deal with labor fairly, we make some laws, we pass some things, we're able to shift that tide so we don't go quite to that extreme. And we can thank our progressives, presidents like Teddy Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson and others who understand that if we don't do things to embrace labor and to bring it into the American fold, so to speak, the reaction will be mob rule, violence, riots, and then revolution.
Yeah, it's great to reach this kind of parity or relationship between management and labor without a Bolshevik revolution.
Exactly. I also thought it was kind of interesting that you have me here on this, and then the next segment's on fertilizer. Is there a correlation between that?
Kind of none.
Is that a coincidence?
Well, I remember reading a lot of history as it related to Teddy Roosevelt, and he had the monopoly. You know, he wanted to break the monopolies, and then that was all the muckraker era, right? Where we were trying to clean up the slaughterhouses and how labor was treated and how the food was treated in those mass-produced
child labor laws, that kind of stuff. You had working conditions. You had children going to work, you know, as young as 8, 9 years old.
For long days.
And then the progressives are also not just worrying about the working conditions, but they're also addressing homes. So the tenement housing and slum conditions and all those kind of things as they start to reform their cities and whatnot, bringing in good city management, sewage and services and all that kind of stuff to, again, that becomes kind of a complex puzzle of our industrializing America. And it all starts because, you know, we are in a post-Civil War period and we're building big things. We're building big factories and we're making locomotives and cars and different kinds of stuff. I mean, we have all this stuff going on, this industrialization. And who's doing that? It's the hands, the labor of people working those machines, mining those ores, working in the fields, whatever it is that are the backbone of all this. And so you have that disparity between the rich, the company owners and management and workers. And so this is just a struggle for that parity, as you said. And fortunately for here in America, cooler heads prevail in the long run, and that works out. It's not easy. There's violence along the way. There's a lot of misinformation goes back and forth. But at the end of the day, we achieve a parity, so to speak. It's not perfect still. Ask workers, some workers
right,
today.
Right, yeah.
But we have methods and things in place now that other places around the world did not have, and so theirs took different turns. And so thank God for America, right?
Amen, in more ways than one, in virtually every way. And, you know, it was kind of one of the ironic elements of this history, if I remember it right, is the newspapers did a lot to expose all this and the media coverage and give Roosevelt the traction and the momentum to get this thing pushed through legislature. And then all the newspaper carriers said, well, what about us? And then they struck.
Exactly. You know, and striking was a way of communicating to the owners of the businesses, the management and whatnot, hey, our conditions are right, and you're not going to make your money unless we do what our part. So we're going to go on strike. And a lot of different industries will take that tactic. And then, of course, either management has to bring them to the table, work things out, or there has to be intervention, whether it's the coal miners and those kinds that were intervened by the federal government because that was became part of war efforts, or even when Ronald Reagan intervened on the behalf of our
flight controllers,
air traffic controllers.
Well, when we get back, I'm going to take you down a path of labor events in Arizona specifically. There's going to be 3 or 4. I'm thinking Cesar Chavez. I'm thinking the Bisbee. I think it's officially known as the Bisbee deportation.
Right.
We'll talk about all that when we get back.
Mm-hmm.